Welcome to Rombook Pod, inclusively yours. This week, Sarah Jean hosts the podcast with special guest author Felicia Davin as we conclude our December coming home and second chance romance theme with all of the holiday baking queer romance. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, and don't forget to check in with us on New Year's Day for a special episode with all of our hosts discussing our 2019 favorite romance reads and our 2020 most anticipated romances.
Welcome to Rombook Pod, inclusively yours. This is your host, Sarah, and to this month's theme, we'll be discussing queer holiday romances. And today, my guest is the lovely Felicia Davin. Hello, Felicia.
Hi, Sarah.
And you are a speculative fiction romance author?
Yeah, I've written one fantasy trilogy that has a strong romance element in it. And my latest books are more genre romance, but they are sci-fi romance.
Gays in space.
Yes.
We always love our gays in space. And you're also the audiobook narrator for your books as well.
I am. I'm working on that. And it is a really interesting experience to lock yourself in a small room with someone and read your book out loud.
So I will say you do a really great job narrating Thornfruit.
Yes.
Thornfruit's the first one. Yeah. Thornfruit is excellent.
Oh, thank you.
So today we're discussing queer holiday romances. And it is the holiday season, though, by the time this airs. This airs actually on Christmas. So that's a double bonus. Our first book is The Remaking of Corbin Whale by Rowan Parrish, which is an anti-Thanksgiving and a Hanukkah romance.
Yes, and I feel a little bit like I didn't fully do my homework on this book because I have not finished it. I'm 60% of the way through it, but I love it so much. And it's really special for me because I am Jewish, although I grew up Jewish in small town Kentucky, where there are not a lot of other Jews. Like, my town did not have a synagogue.
I know someone who's actually from Kentucky who is also Jewish.
Oh, wow. I should meet them.
I believe they were from Louisville. That's the
Louisville,
okay. Kentucky.
That's the big city.
Well, that's. Yeah. I mean, they mentioned going home to Louisville, so I don't know if they're from somewhere else in Kentucky.
It counts as Kentucky.
But they go to Kentucky quite frequently. And they're also local here. They're in my other romance review group. I really, this book is so very lyrical in how the prose, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really loving it, not just because it's special, because it's about Hanukkah, and I haven't read that many books with Jewish main characters, romance novels anyway, but I love how, like, it's speculative. Like, there is magic in the world, but the magic is kind of
from Corbin's perspective, mostly.
It's threaded through, and it's like not every character knows about it, but not in the usual paranormal romance way of like, we have a secret society of vampires. And Corbin sees the world as magic and grew up this way with his aunts and their potions.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really talk about it with anyone else. At least not yet. I'm not finished.
he really doesn't. And it's Corbin's not neurotypical. He sees the world very differently and can perceive things very differently and how he processes his emotions and other things. And how Alex approaches him is very unique and very loving and very caring and also very kinky. It's a very interesting dynamic in the book. This book also will make you hungry.
Yeah, because Alex runs a bakery, and there's a lot of discussion of, like, they start baking things together at the bakery, and there's a lot of discussion of the Hanukkah-related foods, like sufganiyot, that they
make. Which I really, really want to try.
Yes, they are excellent. And they make challah together, and there's a whole plot about kind of the magic of baking the challah and
like baking your emotions into food. And so, like, Corbin keeps trying to bake his he feels that he's evil, that there's something wrong with him, so he tries to bake that out of him and doesn't really work. So then he's like, well, what if I bake the love I have into this bread for Alex? And like, Alex finds him like sleeping in the bakery, like the kitchen sometimes, and Alex is like, okay, and it's very beautiful how Rowan has written this book. And it's, I think it was actually the first book I read by Rowan. And that's what led me to the rest of her books.
Yeah, no, I'm really impressed with it and really looking forward to reading the last 40% of it, because it's been, as we said, so kind of beautiful, dreamlike, lyrical so far, and also just really tender in the romance and these two people feeling drawn to each other. And yeah, Alex just being so kind and accepting of Corbin, and Corbin really wanting to have Alex in his life and not being quite sure how to make that happen.
And it's also technically a coming home romance, which is sort of the alternate theme for this month, because Alex goes back to Ann Arbor after like his life sort of mildly implodes in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about him taking over his parents' bakery and changing the name and like reintegrating the small town. He doesn't have any, well, the small town kind of his issues with him are like the guy who's like the business association dude who's like, what do you mean you don't want to participate in our Thanksgiving?
Oh yeah, we should talk about the Thanksgiving part, because that's another
he's
holiday.
He's very anti-Thanksgiving. He doesn't want to participate. Like, I think does he stay open? He stays open, I think.
Yeah, the bakery stays open on Thanksgiving, even though they know no one's really going to come in. But yeah, I really liked that part, because especially this year at Thanksgiving, I found myself feeling really conflicted about how, like, I love the kind of secular harvest festival aspect of Thanksgiving, but it's so painful to me that it's on this day that for a lot of Indigenous communities is a day of mourning.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that it's worth it for us to celebrate.
It's really not. I personally, because I'm like a kitchen witch kind of, so I celebrate like the Wheel of the Year harvest. So like for me, the big fall holiday is the equinox. So I always try to do something around the equinox, and that's like my dad, he still makes the Thanksgiving dinners, even though there's just the two of us plus the menagerie of animals in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But like the family aspect of Thanksgiving doesn't really, they're like, it isn't there anymore there for me. And neither really is it for Christmas, because I also celebrate Yule or winter solstice. So it's just Thanksgiving just doesn't. There's an episode of the Mystery History podcast of the woman who campaigned Abraham Lincoln to have Thanksgiving as like an actual holiday, and how that came about, and then later on the Pilgrims were incorporated into it.
Oh really? I will have to look this up. It sounds interesting.
I'll find the episode and that'll be in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a recent episode, but it's just like there's no need. It's just the same with Columbus Day. There's no need for Columbus Day to be a holiday. If we need
We should absolutely cancel
random
that.
Monday off. We should make it Indigenous Peoples Day, like some states do or some cities do, or just, you know, give off Election Day. Well, Election Day should be on a weekend anyways, but you know.
Yes. Yeah, it should absolutely be a national holiday.
National holidays are interesting. Because like in Massachusetts, we have Patriots Day, which is our just random April Monday holiday of like, hey, we did things in the American Revolution. Ha ha ha. Here, have a day off. And then like Boston also has like Evacuation Day, which is also related to the British invading Boston and like how our troops had to evacuate in like 1700s.
Oh, see, I live in Massachusetts and I am not aware of these things because I moved here pretty recently.
It's like we don't get Easter off at work, so we get Patriots Day off instead.
Oh.
That's how it works, or at least where I work.
Interesting. But yeah, it was really, it felt kind of affirming to see in the remaking of Corbin Whale this kind of anti-Thanksgiving attitude, which also appears in one of her other books.
Small Change.
Small Change, which is a
queer MF.
And a straight man.
Yes.
Yeah.
With Ginger and Christopher. There we go. Christopher.
Oh, good job. I was not coming up with that. I was no help.
She has, I think it's either a Christmas or Hanukkah short story that she's working on for them, where Christopher gets pegged.
Oh, excellent. So I am very much in support of that.
That is a thing that Rowan is working on right now. And I think she has another Christmas short story that's free right now that she's posting about on Twitter, which I need to read as well.
Yeah, but I loved in Small Change that they go get a burrito from the special burrito place that has like turkey and cranberry flavors. This place makes holiday burritos, and like that's what they do for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then like, I think
it has Christmas and Hanukkah in
there's
it
also
too.
Christmas and Hanukkah in it, because Ginger is Jewish.
Yes. Very much appreciate.
And I really like Ginger because she's a quote unquote unlikable heroine, I suppose, but she's
I love a messy, angry female protagonist.
And it's just, I just love Ginger and her. And Christopher, like, doesn't care that she's queer. Like, he's all on board for everything. Like, he's very supportive.
Super sweet.
And she says some very mean things to him when she's in a breakdown. And he's still, like, and Jude's just like, hey. Like, Christopher's brother's like, hey, by the way. And he just, like, gives her a talk. And is like, you know, you either go through things with him or you don't. Like, you gotta figure it out. And I just really like how Jude is introduced for his own book and stuff like that, and gives power to characters. Like, Rowan really does character depth very well, and I really like that, especially with, like, her Riven series, which is all centered around, like, various addictions and traumas and not holiday related. Also, the audio for Corbin Whale is really great, and my book club is actually discussing it this coming weekend, or will have discussed it by the time this airs, and I'm off to look for some Sufganiyat. So another anti-Thanksgiving book is Checked Baggage by Valentine Wheeler, who's another local Massachusetts author, I think.
Yes, and full disclosure, she is a friend of mine. Yeah, Checked Baggage is not necessarily, it's not as anti-Thanksgiving as Small Change or the remaking of Corbin Whale, but it's about seeing Thanksgiving in a different light, and it's about these two people, both American citizens who have Lebanese heritage, which Valentine Wheeler also has, and they are stuck in the Beirut airport together on, like, trying to get back to the US for Thanksgiving. And of course, they end up in the same hotel room, and you'll be so surprised to learn that there is only one bed.
Oh no, how terrible.
And so it's a short story, or a novella, I guess.
This is a very pretty cover.
It does have a very pretty cover. And so they end up connecting about sort of their heritage and their status as immigrants, whether they're, one of them I think is an immigrant and the other one is a sort of first or second generation immigrant.
And isn't the story we get to see very often in holiday romances.
Yeah. And then when they finally do make it back to the US, there's a little bit of going home to the family and having Thanksgiving and interpreting Thanksgiving in your own way, your family's immigrant tradition way, which also shows up in Adriana Herrera's An American Fairy Tale, which is also a novel about immigrants. They have Thanksgiving in that book in a way that's really cool, and they don't necessarily have the traditional foods, but they have foods from their own cultures. A thing I love about Adriana Herrera's writing is that she's so good at writing food. Yes.
I think it was like after I read American Dreamer, I was like, okay, I gotta go find some Dominican food. And then I think I ended up at a Venezuelan restaurant instead. So we were up in Lowell for one of the queer street talks they were doing. We ended up at like a little Venezuelan hole in the wall restaurant. It was giant platters of food. And I was just like, I can't eat all this. I guess it's leftovers now. but people who write food really well are like,
it's a skill. It's a talent.
Because then I just want to eat all the food.
And speaking of Adriana Herrera and food, she also wrote an FF Christmas novella, which is called Mangoes and Mistletoe, which I just read and loved. It is adorable and also very sexy. And it is about two Dominicanas who are in a sort of Great British Bake Off style reality TV cooking competition.
I love this.
And so they find themselves in this castle in Scotland. And the premise of the competition is that it's teams of two people, and one person is like a professional cook, like a pastry chef or whatever, baker, and the other person is a really good home cook. And so these two women get paired together on the team, and they have to compete against all these other teams. And they have some conflict about how Dominican they're going to make their baked goods. Like, are they going to incorporate mango and coconut and guava into the things that they're baking? Or are they going to do a more like traditional European style baked good? So they butt heads a lot in the beginning. And of course, then they stop butting heads and they have sex and they fall in love. Yeah. And it's very hot.
I'm all for Great British Bake Off style cooking romances. My favorite thing on Great British Bake Off is when someone who has like a a white British person incorporating their culture into the food, and the hosts are just like, are you a really good idea? Is it a really good idea to put turmeric in that? Or like this other spice or this other fruit? And they're just like, yeah, but this is what I'm doing. And they do it, and the judges end up loving it. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I really, just give me more Bake Off romances. That is, yes, fill this niche.
Yeah. So anyway, Mangoes and Mistletoe is maybe coming out to on the day that we are recording this, which is December 8th, sometime around now. So it's out this December.
Yes, it will mm-hmm. be out by the time this airs. So yes. Go get that. Go enjoy all the mangoes. So there's a movie that is, well, it's a queer romance movie. It's called Big Eden. It came out in the early 2000s, and it is probably the only gay rom-com that I actually really love. Mm-hmm. So it's about this, and it takes place in Montana, because every gay small-town movie has to take place in Montana.
This is a rule. I didn't know about this rule.
And it's about this big New York City artist who has to go home because the grandfather who raised him had a stroke, and he has to go take care of him. And his, like, publicist is, like, all up in arms, and she's like, you haven't come out to him yet. And the only person who ever says the word gay throughout the entire movie is his publicist in New York. The entire mm-hmm. small town never mentions it, but they spend the entire movie trying to get him together with the Native American man who runs the general store. Because they're like, well, Pike clearly likes him, so we're all going to help Pike learn how to cook these dishes mm-hmm. so that this man's grandfather can have nutritious meals. And there's, like, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and there's also about loss and coming out. And the only downside is, I suppose, that no one ever uses the word gay. It's very obvious that these characters are queer. Like, there's two mm-hmm. lumberjack lesbians when they're building a ramp for Sam that are just like, she just puts her arm around her wife and is like, yeah, hey. Mm-hmm. And it's very cute and very loving. And I just, the small town is all, everyone's on board with these two guys getting together.
Aww,
and like, there is like a subplot where the main character is still like in love with his like straight best friend, who's not really straight. Mm-hmm. Who's probably actually bi or closeted gay, but they don't use the words because small town.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a little bit frustrating in that sense, but also it's a very sweet movie, because mm-hmm. you feel sympathy for everyone, and you like how they end up together at the end. And Pike does like everything he can to get, I think his name is Henry, back. And it's so very sweet and loving.
Yeah. I love the setting of a small town where you easily could write a small town that's very prejudiced, but I love when people kind of flip it around and actually the small town is really welcoming and warm. And
it actually got panned when it came out for being like, it's just too unrealistic that no small town would ever be this accepting.
Right.
And it's like, but come on, let us have this.
Yeah.
So it's still available. I actually have the DVD for it. It's like on Amazon, and get it from your local library or stuff like that. But it's such a lovely movie.
Yeah.
Though none of the actors are gay. That's the only other downside. No one is actually queer in this movie.
It sounds a little bit like Schitt's Creek. Have you watched Schitt's Creek?
I have watched Schitt's Creek, and I just was not in the right mindset when watching the beginning of Schitt's Creek. Because I was like, oh my God, I can't
do it. You didn't get to the queer love story of Schitt's Creek.
So I know about the queer love story. Okay. And part of me is like, what if I just skip everything and go to that season, but then nothing else will make sense?
Well, you could totally. It's not like it's a very complicated plot.
Though, you liked Miss Dominguez.
Oh, yeah.
Dominguez-Chris.
Yes.
Kiss.
This is by Lydia San Andres. It's a short story, and it's in a collection of other Christmas-themed short stories, but the title short story is FF. I really love Lydia San Andres writes historical romance, and it's all set in this fictional Caribbean island that's kind of like located sort of around Cuba and the Dominican Republic. Like it's in that area, but it's a fictional island. And it's set in like the early 1900s.
Ooh.
So it's queer historical romance, this one. And it's two young women who live in the same boarding house, and they are roommates. And
ooh, scandalous.
And they, in the beginning of the short story, don't realize that they are that they have feelings for each other. And the short story is about them realizing it, and it takes place around Christmas, and it's really super sweet. And I just it's I really love an unusual historical setting in historical romance. Like, there's not that I don't love Regency England, but there's a lot of Regency England.
There's a lot of Regency England, and please give me something other than Regency England. And also don't give me, or if you give me Gilded Age, it has to be slums Gilded Age. Or like not rich white people Gilded Age either in the US.
Yeah, no, I love a historical romance that deals
unless they're gay. You can give me gay rich people Gilded Age.
Any historical romance that deals with any kind of marginalization, like if there are class differences or if there's queer people or people of color, like I just love to see people who have been previously on the margins of history finding a happy ending in history. That's really meaningful to me.
Because we've always been here and I've always gotten happy endings. Not all the time, but some of the time we've gotten happy endings. So it's like very important in queer historical romance to see that. Especially in like the Caribbean settings, we don't have a lot of Caribbean set historical romances.
Yeah. So no, I really, Lydia San Andres is a great writer and I really love that she wrote this, little queer short story. And, I have not read all of the novels. The one novel that I have read by her is MF, but I also highly recommend that one.
My hope is when people who write inclusive series, like, Lily Maxton,
oh, yes, we have a book on the list.
Lily Maxton has The Highlander Haunting, which is a side novella in her the Townsend series, which is MF, both their cishet MFs, an MM book, an FF book. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other MF book has a heroine who is intersex. I haven't had this 100% confirmed to me because I haven't read that one yet, but I've read the MF and the MM, and I just really like how she has this series that isn't just all cishet MF and it's very inclusive, but like Highlander Haunting, I think it ends up just like being the cat that's haunting this house, but there's also ghosts, but the cat's like the one who like sees the ghosts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They have to figure out like how to stop this haunting and stuff like that. And
I love it.
No, the cat in the first MM book was haunting the house because they kept hearing weird noises.
Listen, I fully believe that, like, if there is another plane of existence, cats know about it.
Yes, go read the Lily Maxton books. They're very queer, and there's a Halloween novella, The Highlander Hunting, and it's very lovely. And just, I want more historical romances that are inclusive of all couples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to read some Lily Maxton. Those are in my future.
So the one I tweeted about last night on Twitter of how can a Ron Suss series be inclusive to Christmas is the Diversion series by Eden Winters. So it's about two members of the Department of Southeastern Narcotics Bureau and the Department of Control, like narcotics control and stuff like that. They try to stop drug traffickers and like hospitals from using like gray market drugs that they probably shouldn't be using because they don't know if they're like safe. So book one, they're investigating a pain clinic that's been giving out a lot higher number of prescriptions and stuff like that, and is actually like drug trafficking. So they're in Florida and they're like, well, we're gonna be stuck here for Christmas, so I guess we should like get each other little gifts. And they hate each other, but they're also sleeping with each other. And Lucky is an ex-con who was the lover of a gray market drug kingpin, who testified against him because he thought the guy was going to leave him behind and escape off to Mexico. And Bo is a Marine veteran with PTSD who's very rigid. Everything must be perfect. He's completely put together. Really, he's not very put together because inside he's just like, everything's falling apart. but he's like, he has this facade. Everything must be organized and right perfectly. And he only drinks green tea, uncaffeinated green tea or decaf green tea, and is only vegetarian because no vices, because he is a recovering addict, I suppose, is the terminology now we would use. Anyone feel free to correct me on this. And they're working together and they hate each other, but they're all sleeping together because they're really attracted to each other. They get this
a classic.
Yeah. They get this Christmas cactus, and the Christmas cactus follows them throughout each book because they don't end up getting to spend Christmas together because Bo thinks Lucky is dead. And Lucky has to assume a new identity for the next four books. But they're still together. Like, he's still working together, but he has a new identity, and Bo doesn't know that, or the end of book one. And in book 2 and 3, they can't spend Christmas together because Beau is undercover. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, they really want to spend the holidays together because they're trying to build their relationship. Like, Lucky is terrified. Like, he's never, mm-hmm. he just wants people to leave him alone, but he's still really in love with Beau. And Beau's like, well, let's start this relationship. And Lucky doesn't know what to do. And then Beau gets kidnapped by a drug cartel in Mexico.
Wow. So they're still waiting to spend Christmas together.
By book 4, they're still waiting to spend Christmas together. Book 5, after they've rescued, and it's all about the recovery from Mexico and Beau dealing with his PTSD and how he was forced to take drugs in Mexico and dealing with that recovery. They go to therapy, both of them separately. So mm-hmm. it's the only series I've seen where in a book they start therapy mm-hmm. and in subsequent books they're still in therapy dealing with their trauma and dealing with trauma of the past as well. Mm-hmm. And book 5, they don't get to spend Christmas together either because they have to go back to Mexico to talk to the cartels. Mm-hmm. And they get home Christmas Day. They finally do get to spend the holidays together mm-hmm. in novellas 7.1 and 7.2.
A long wait.
A long wait for them to, and it takes it over the course of 3 years is mm-hmm. that's how the story develops. And it's really affirming of recovering from trauma and finding your own family and rediscovering your old family. And one of the few books, it's also one of my favorite books I've read this year because I glommed this entire series like in a week and a half on audio mm-hmm. because the development of the relationship is so profound. And you don't, as I said, you don't get to see often as characters who go through traumatic events in a book get therapy that isn't just a one-off in a Ramses setting. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important.
Yeah.
It's such a good series. And it's one that I turned around, finished it. It was coming up on GRL Gay Romance Lit. And I asked one of my friends, like, can you get these signed for me? And she's like, Ian just closed her pre-order for books last night, but let me ask. And my friend Angel Martinez was able to get all copies signed for me, as well as a tote bag of like fan art of it. And I was just like, oh, this series.
All right, we have a couple other things that you wrote down on the list that I have not read. So you want to tell me about them?
Yeah. So Winter Oranges by Marie Sexton takes place kind of around Christmas in the winter holidays in, I believe, I want to say Idaho. And it's about a B-movie star who is kind of washed up, just wants to get away from everything, and buys this house in the middle of nowhere where no one's going to find him. And he doesn't want to cause trouble because he just needs to get away. And he finds this snow globe and he's like, oh, this is a cool snow globe. So he leaves it up in like the side barn or something that's attached to the house. And turns out there's someone in that snow globe. And it's a Civil War era soldier. he keeps seeing this person in the window and he's like, someone's in my house. So he starts calling the cops and the cops are like, what is, there's no one here. You're losing it a little bit. And it turns out that there is actually a person in the snow globe and he's from, I think it was Tennessee, and the snow globe has migrated mm-hmm. around the place and his sister trapped him in there so he wouldn't go to war. Because he didn't want to lose him. And she wrote a way how to get him out of it in the back on the bottom of the snow globe. But no one can read her handwriting. So they don't understand what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's about them falling in love. And the B-movester also kind of like ends up in the snow globe sort of. And they have sex. And eventually the guy obviously gets out of the snow globe. It's a lot of magical realism, obviously, because someone is trapped in a snow globe, but it's a lot of fun and I really enjoyed it. And that was like when that was Winter Oranges by Marie Sexton. Mm-hmm. And then another series that, because we don't get a lot to see of, get to see a lot of pagan holidays in romance is the Tyak and Frayn series by Harper Fox, which is about a small town copper and a very small village, the village of Dark in Cornwall. And he has a missing child case and the family is called in a psychic. And he's like, ah, these people are just trying to take money from this family. And no, he is an actual psychic in there. And that mm-hmm. one, the first book takes place around Halloween or Samhain and is called Once Upon a Haunted Moor. And it's about trying to find the child and how there's a beast on the moor and was the beast done and stuff like that. And then Tinselfish book 2 takes place around the winter solstice and deals with Gideon Gideon's father, who was an old man in a nursing home, and Gideon has a very tough relationship with his father because he was like a Presbyterian minister and was not very accepting at all of his son, and deals with trying to figure out the deaths of homeless people. And like Lee had like gets psychic visions and stuff like that and like can see things. And then book three deals with, I think, Spring Moon or Ostara. I don't quite remember. And that's more, and they're also underground mystery. Like book four is Midsummer. Book five is the Fall Harvest. Book six is the Solstice. There is a Halloween.
Oh, that's really cool.
Novella. Yeah. And then the latest one that's out deals with centered around May Eve. And there's a very heavy, not heavy handed, but it's very throughout, it like deals with pagan Cornish traditions in the area, and Herbert Fox is pagan herself, so she's incorporated all this into them. And it's another book series where you watch the couple grow from book one throughout the series as they start a family, as they try to stay together, and like they adopt Lee's niece and stuff like that. You don't, like I said, you don't see pagan holidays all that much in romance. Although when you do, I suppose it's all, the two that I know the most, they're all centered around like some paranormal aspect, but it's all, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Do we have other things that we want to mention briefly?
The one I wanted to mention briefly is Benton's Bakery and the Hanukkah Miracle by Penelope Peters. It's centered around Hanukkah. It's about a man who owns a kosher bakery and a hockey coach who's in town for like a hockey tournament with the kids on his team, and he runs. Part of it that I found interesting but also very conflicting is the hockey coach, he's not Orthodox, but he's more religious than the kosher bakery owner. Because the kosher bakery owner, like you said, he grew up in a small town. His parents were professors and moved around and were in small.
Just like me.
And we're like in a small setting and didn't really have a very big Jewish community, whereas the hockey coach came from a very big French Canadian Jewish community. And there's several plot points of the hockey coach being like, you're not Jewish enough. That's part of the conflict of their relationship is the kosher bakery owner is like, no, I don't need to prove to you that I'm Jewish enough. Like there's the hockey coach goes upstairs to his like apartment and they're like getting hot and heavy and stuff like that. And then like he sees a picture of the bakery owner's family with the Hanukkah bush and then gets very mad. So it's about him. It's very complicated because I'm not Jewish, so I can't be like, this is how it is. But I enjoyed the food and I enjoyed the aspect of it because it's not something you get to see often. And they do like, they work things out. And I really like that when they finally, that they work things out. And it was, it's another book that has Souf Ghaniyat in it. And I'm just like, I just want to eat all the things. Come on. Another quick one is Handmade Holidays by Nathan Burgoyne, which is another novella from Nine Star Press that deals with found family in a small queer community and finding yourselves and making your own traditions with like an ornament that you make and how you keep all these things that you make that are your own after you don't have anything. And I love his writing. His writing is very lyrical. And he has a new one coming out called Fo Ho Ho.
And it's about a fake relationship at Christmas, which I'm very excited about.
Yes.
Oh, and since we just mentioned both French Canadian hockey and Nine Star Press, I will say that my friend K.R. Collins is writing a series for Nine Star. The first one's called Breaking the Ice, and it is about a woman who, there's a fictional professional hockey league in these books that decides to go co-ed. I guess, what do we say? They decide to allow women into the men's professional league, and she's
co-ed.
She's the first woman. It's a long series, and she has an arc of kind of discovering that she's both demisexual and bi, and she falls in love with another woman hockey player.
Oh, nice.
And I wanted to mention these because there's a lot of stuff about the team as family, and the team is really often celebrating American Thanksgiving or Canadian Thanksgiving together.
I don't know why there's a Canadian Thanksgiving, in all honesty.
I mean, I think it's similar. I don't, I'm not Canadian, so I won't comment on it, but
but like the themes I like the most in romances is found family and making your own family, and also like with the Virgin series, reconnecting with your past family and how hard that can be. The one thing I don't like in holiday romances is the queer characters having to go home and dealing with homophobic relatives.
Yeah.
And that's, no one wants that, and we have to deal with it, but you don't need to center a romance around that, and that's not something I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
For our lovely TBR list, I've got a couple. Chelsea Cameron has, is it the Christmas Inn Maine?
Yeah, Inn with two N's.
An inn.
And it looks like a contemporary FF Christmas romance, so very sweet.
Erin McClellan has Stocking Stuffers, which is an MF with a bi heroine that's a erotic novella? Erotic romance novella,
yes,
I think?
Yes, I think that's right.
And she has written several MM romances, including she's a Storm Chasers one with Tornadoes.
Oh, interesting.
All her books are on my TBR, and I own Control of Burn, but I haven't read it yet. Garrett Lee, I did not put the title for the new Garrett Lee, has a new MM Christmas romance.
Oh, and then this Elliot Cooper one that you wrote down. What is that about?
Hearts of Light. It's a Hanukkah romance with a golem.
Golem. Mm-hmm. Sounds really interesting.
And then Keira Andrews has Eight Nights, which is another Hanukkah romance. And I found a Kwanzaa romance called Kiss Me at Kwanzaa by L.L. Bucknor, which is on my TBR. And then, as we mentioned before, Nathan Burgoyne has Fo Ho Ho, which is an MM fake relationship one. And then the ever-wonderful Shira Glassman has Ethan's Cord, which is an FFF Hanukkah romance with Hanukkah fairies and sex magic.
Mm-hmm. Sounds lovely.
Performing a miracle at Hanukkah. And then she has a one called The Generous Princess, which takes place during Purim. And then Aviva and the Aliens, which takes place during Passover. And then Zan West has Eight Kinky Nights, which comes out, I think, well, by the time this airs, it'll be out. But it's an FF novella centered around Hanukkah. Mm-hmm.
I think it might be a novel. I'm not sure.
Is it a novel?
Maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyway, it looks great.
The cover of it is fantastic. It is so gorgeous. And I'm really excited for this one because they've been posting, they post like little snippets on like Twitter constantly. And it's just, I really liked Nine Swords Reversed. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read My Troublesome Crush yet, which I think takes place during Passover or has a Pesach.
Yeah.
Pesach.
Yeah.
which is part of Passover.
Yeah, same thing.
That's
just the Hebrew word for it. Yeah.
Zan and Shira both do, how they incorporate Judaism into their books is really strong and really powerful. Mm-hmm. Like Shira Glassman's Tales of the Purge is basically just a Jewish high fantasy series.
Yeah, and even Shira's Knit One Girl Too, it's contemporary, but like both heroines are Jewish, and I really loved that.
I think I have that one, but I don't know if I finished it or not, but I know I own it. And then, as a little aside for cool queer things this month, I listened to the Love and Luck podcast, which is a queer romance podcast audio drama that's all done through voicemails, which sounds like a little odd thing to do, but it's really great.
Yeah.
It's about two guys who meet at a club and they start leaving voicemails to each other because they have their phones on silent all the time. Mm-hmm. So they keep missing each other and the relationship develops through these voicemails.
Oh, it's like an epistolary romance.
It's an epistolary romance through voicemails, and they start this queer dry bar and cafe. And it's cute in the saying that they leave voicemails to each other, but it also deals with trauma around gay bashings through severe homophobia, and it's all taking place in Australia. Mm-hmm. And one of the men, Kane, is trans. He's a trans man. And there's they take in people, and they've made this bar disability friendly, and they take in people who need help off the street and stuff like that. And it's a very, it deals with some very heavy topics like being kicked out of your family and stuff like that. But it's so lovingly done, and I believe one of the voice actors is trans, if not both. Mm-hmm. And they're also polyamorous, and the entire cast is queer, and it's just very powerful. And then the Caravan podcast, which is a western with demons.
Ooh.
told, I think, in the Grand Canyon, which is a lot of fun, and it actually has a sex scene in it with the character who's been partly possessed by the soul of a vampire.
Okay.
With his soul in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this makes sense. And then the Kaleidotrope podcast is a podcast that is centered around a college that is built upon trope magic. Or they think they're built on trope magic. And it's about these two radio hosts, one who's just trying to do a music hour on the radio for the school. And his co-host is like, no, we're going to turn it into answers and questions that everyone's going to text us. And they start giving like relationship advice centered around the tropes that the people are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you have the two couple that has to raise an egg baby together. Or their baristas leaving them hearts and stuff like that. But is there really trope magic? Ha ha ha. But and it's 10 episodes, and they get the two guys that are the hosts, they get the PA at the end. And because this is the end of the year, it's a quick little jump. What is your favorite book that you've read this year, Felicia?
This is such a hard question. I have read some really excellent books this year. I really, really loved Alyssa Cole's A Prince on Paper, which is MF where the hero is bisexual. I just saw her describe it on Twitter today as two cinnamon rolls, one bed. but yeah, I love everything Alyssa Cole writes and that whole series. But that book, I think, is my favorite in the Reluctant Royals series. Yeah, so the hero is bisexual. And there is also, this is a little bit of a spoiler, a non-binary character in the supporting cast.
I want them to get their own book. And I don't know if they're getting their own book in the new side series or not.
I don't know.
But
maybe.
I want them to have their own story.
So that's one of the best romances I read. Also Gilded Cage by KJ Charles, which is also queer MF. And that one, the heroine is bisexual. I really love the combination of the historical setting and the jewel thief and the detective and like that dynamic where she is really smart and fierce and not nice. And he is just like, I love her so much. Like, she's not nice to him and he does not care.
That's also a second chance romance because he...
Yes, it's a second chance romance.
Well, they both kind of... Well, no, he mostly screwed up. But also, I spent most of that book crying over the mentions of Richard and David from The Gentleman's...
Oh, yeah,
like,
I love how...
Gentleman's Position. I was like, oh, God, old Richard and David. Oh, no.
It's connected to all of KJ Charles' other historical series, which is really great.
Yeah, especially in her London sequence. And I was just like, oh, no, they grew old together. Yes. And, so it's like the audiobook for that just came out. So I have to reread it to actually properly appreciate Suki's relationship. It's been me crying over that.
Yeah. And then I just finished, this is not a romance, it's a sci-fi novel, Arkady Martin's A Memory Called Empire, but it is queer and does have a romance in it. And just the writing is really beautiful. There's such cool concepts in it. So it's a kind of a space opera. There's a big space empire. The main character is an ambassador from sort of a remote space station outpost going to the capital of the empire, trying to solve this murder mystery. And she comes from this culture where they have a neural implant that can give you another person's memories and kind of consciousness. And so she has the memories of the previous ambassador, who was a man. And he's supposed to be lending her his knowledge and skills, but he is kind of out of date and then malfunctions. And so she's kind of stranded on her own in the capital. And but yeah, there's a lot of queer characters in it. It does have a beautiful romance, although not a happily ever after, but it's the first book in the series. So we shall see. But anyway, I really, really enjoyed that. And what's the best book that you've read this year?
So I talked about this on our New Year's Day episode, but, In Other Lands by Sarah Rhys Brennan made me cry and spoke to my heart because Elliot is a little shit. But
yes.
It's the Portal
a
Fantasy.
A wonderful, wonderful little shit.
It's a wonderful little shit. I actually got bookmarks off Etsy that's like, you're the weirdo table. You're the man-hating elf girl and the quiet gay kid. You're the weird, like, that quote is like my favorite quote. So that there was a bookmark on Etsy that had that quote. And I bought two of them. They came from Australia. But that book, which broke my heart, put it back together, and I have both copies of it in hardback and paperback, because there's a short story from Leek's perspective.
Oh. Or
short story, I say, but it's actually like 80 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Diversion series is probably my other favorite because of the found family themes and the relationship arc. And then Charity Case by Malkandrax, which is a webcomic about a musician who loses his job and then loses his house. And these two Silver Fox elderly lesbians help him out, mm-hmm. and get him a new room share. And he falls in love with his roommates, mm-hmm. which are, I think they're both cis MF couple. Mm-hmm. And he's very much... So I describe his aesthetic as anyone who knows the Adventure Zone as he looks like Taco. Or he reminds me of Taco from the Adventure Zone in his aesthetic, because it's very capes and big hats and all these very feminine baubles. But mm-hmm. And I believe the artist's point is that eventually they realize that they're not cis.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think they realize eventually that they're ace as well. Or at least that's what I get from their Patreon. Because that was like the one of the few things where I was like, oh my God, I need to follow them on Patreon now and shoves money at them to get the rest of the episodes.
Yeah. And do you have reading goals for next year?
My reading goals for next year are to read more FF, because I don't read enough of that. And read more authors of color, or at least increase the percentage of authors of color that I read in queer romance, and probably to actually finish a queer nonfiction book. I haven't finished anything this year that's nonfiction related.
Yeah, no, I think it's also one of my goals to read more inclusively. And I've really, I've been working on that this year, and I've really loved a lot of the, more inclusive stuff that I read. And I think I have a goal of reading more nonfiction also, because I read some really great nonfiction this year. And yeah, it's so interesting. I'm really interested in history. And now I'm writing something set in history. So it's been interesting to learn about.
Yeah. A lot of the nonfiction I have, it's all related to gay history. Mm-hmm. But then I'll just like read one page and then forget about it, or read a chapter and then forget about it. And like, there's audiobooks for them, but they're expensive. And even with the library, it's just like, I can use this, or I can read more romance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's broadening my queer reading tastes, I suppose, is the goal. But yeah, well, thank you for joining me, Felicia.
Oh, can I plug my book?
Yes, plug your book, please, because your books are fantastic.
Actually, I just had a book come out. It's called Out of Nowhere, and it is MM sci-fi romance. And related to this episode, it very briefly has a holiday mentioned in it. One of the main characters is Jewish, but he's Jewish like me, which is that he's not very good at being Jewish. So that's my own voice's representation. It's for lazy Jews. And the book is set in 2093, and he gets a text from his sister near the beginning that says, L'Shana Tova, which is Happy New Year, so Happy Rosh Hashanah. And he's like, oh yeah, I guess it is Rosh Hashanah. So that's the extent of the holiday mention. But I'm very proud of myself that I actually looked up when Rosh Hashanah was going to fall in 2093. So that is accurate. I looked up the Jewish calendar and how it coincides with 2093.
That's actually kind of really cool.
Yeah. But anyway, so this book is about childhood best friends who discover the existence of the multiverse, and then they use it to run a scam where they get revenge on the trillionaire who wronged them, and they accidentally fall in love. That's what that book
is about. So eat the rich, be gay, do crimes in space. Excellent.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the show and letting me come visit and play with your cat.
Yes. My ancient cat.
All right.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
To anyone celebrating.
To anyone who celebrates. If you're dealing with family, I hope you have pets that you can go hide and play with and cuddle, because if your family sucks, just go upstairs and hide with the cat. And I will see you in 2020, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode of ROM Book Pod, Inclusively Yours, a new weekly podcast celebrating inclusive romance. one trope at a time. If you'd like weekly recommendations for inclusive romance, please take a moment to subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest at RomBookPod. That's RomBkPod. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, happy reading.